You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
The Flyers swept the Pens but lost the Selke winner in the process. Carter Hart shines bright like a diamond, and the Buffalo Sabres come to town this week. Join us as we take a look at the game's past and future for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Carry on by Claude Giroux. Giroux holding, gets around in front. Goal!
Contingent.
Hey, everybody. I'm your host with the most, Joe Gazarian, and I am thankful for Carter Hart.
I'm Matt Arenick, and I'm already getting heat from the Avs fans, and I'm loving it here, boys.
I'm Mike Zawisa, and we were this close to getting a Penguins' own three-star, but we can't have nice things anymore, I guess.
Not just yet. Speaking of the Penguins, though, the Flyers did edge them out 5-2 in what can only be described as theft of a game. The Flyers were outplayed for, I would say, almost the entire game outside of a couple minutes early in the first and then a few at the third. Carter Hart was bailing water all night, but he proved what, you know, a true franchise goalie can do for you and steal a game when your team just doesn't have it. What were your guys' big thoughts on the game? I know Matt was tough with you driving, so Mike, why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, Matt, congrats on the big move. It's a marathon drive that you pulled off. You missed. Yeah. It was a good game to miss, I guess. But
27 hours later, I'm sure you guys can hear in the background all the things going on, still trying to get settled in. But yeah, I was only really able to catch the end of the third. But yeah, Mike, go ahead and jump in and kind of give everyone a thought of what you saw there.
Yeah, I mean, from the start of this game, it looked like we were on our way to one of the most like fun runaway victories in recent memory. I mean, the Flyers got a goal, not necessarily early on, but yeah, kind of early. And then they quickly put home two others and chased Jari out of the net. And all of a sudden it's 3-0, 10 minutes into the game. And it looked like I said, they were off and running. It was kind of like pond hockey out there.
Shinny hockey, but,
as Hartsy says.
I did see that. Everyone was so convinced. As soon as I listened to it, that was the first thing I heard, too, was shinny. Mm-hmm. Not.
I heard shinny as well. Yeah. I didn't hear the other word.
It's got to be because most American fans don't know. Like, unless you play the game or you're really close to the sport, you're not going to hear that term a lot, I guess. But
we just had, big brains over here.
Yeah, huge, humongous brains on this podcast. But yeah, no, and then the Pens got a good power play. Crosby kind of got lost down low. I'm not sure how teams continuously like forget about him behind the defense and stuff, but he's made a career of doing plays like that and scored a nice little goal. Pens are right back in it, and then they followed up with, I think it was Mark Jankowski again, or was it Tanev?
Tanev,
yeah.
He's had a really great start to the year.
He's had a good start to the year.
That third line, I mean, we gave them some credit when we talked to the Pens guys, and I'll be the first to admit I didn't foresee that type of chemistry this quickly and how formidable they've been. But I mean, give them credit. I mean, it makes their fourth line exponentially worse, as we've seen, in my opinion. But that third line is no joke.
Yeah, 100%. Good start for those guys. But you know, all of a sudden you're looking at a 3-2 game, and the Pens were looking pretty good on offense. The Flyers were a little sluggish on defense. I think the Pens were also pretty ugly in their own end. They were turning pucks over left and right, too. And I think you could see it today as well with the Caps. Just as a side note, that Penguins defense, you know, even the top four is not really holding it together right now. John Marino had a brutal day on the ice. Dumoulin didn't have a great day. So it's going to be interesting to see how they, if they can reel it in. But in terms of the Flyers, I think my takeaway from this game is obviously it was kind of shitty. They got outshot by a pretty wide margin. But I mean, they build a 3-0 lead, and you build leads so that you can like hold on to it, I guess. Like I'm not saying they should be playing by the skin of their teeth or anything like that, but you know, 3-0 lead, and then they wind up winning 5-2, so they clearly held it together enough to pull out the win, and they capitalized on their chances. I mean, that's the biggest part. We saw again a third period similar to opening night, where Flyers get a break the other way and they're able to bust the game open, and that's it. Like, that's how, if you're winning 3-2 or 3-1 or whatever during a game, teams are going to take chances, and the Pens took some chances. They're already not a good enough defensive team, and the Flyers were able to make them pay for it. So that's kind of my takeaway of it. Plus, I mean, being down Coots, it's good to just get out with the win.
That was some of the worst hockey I've ever seen. Hand to God. I think you're being very nice to them, Mike, which is fine. That second period, I lost count how many odd man rushes they gave up. Mm-hmm. And Coots or not, like, you lost Coots 45 seconds into the game. So spare me the, oh, we didn't have Coots. You essentially didn't have him the entire game. So the game, I mean,
plan that's pretty big, though. Like,
yeah, but
you're without him the whole game.
You still have, you've got Giroux who can take draws. You've got Hayes. You've got Patrick. You've got Lawton. You have plenty of talent to still win the game without Couturier. So you had, say the first was a gong show. It made zero sense. I didn't think at one point during the game the Flyers were in control at any point in the game. Not from the first puck drop. It looked like the Penguins took it to them. Flyers were just, got really weird, lucky bounces. I mean, two of TK's goals went off his skate, and he didn't even connect it. And credit to him for going to the net and putting himself in position to score. But yeah, that first period was horrible. The second period was ungodly bad. The defensive pairings, I don't know what they were doing. I've never seen that many odd man rushes. Gustafson, oof, did not have a great game. Neither did Haig. I thought that the two of them out there were constantly just, I don't know if they're getting lost in the neutral zone or if they just weren't paying attention, but it would feel like in every 3 minutes there was an odd man rush going the other way, either a 2-on-1 or breakaway. Good they got out with the win, but I thought they looked a lot better in the third. I think they did settle down a little bit more, but holy cow.
Sorry, Matt, go ahead. I talked a lot to start it.
No, you're good. I was only going to mention, obviously, because I didn't get to watch the game, so it's hard for me to speak to exactly what happened. But from a perspective of just starting out the season kind of in a high-scoring way, based on the fact you guys are mentioning a lot of odd man rushes, it almost leads me to believe that, you know, maybe that the offense is looking for that too often now, kind of the cheap, easy plays, maybe a bounce off the boards or over a stick to lead the other way, when in reality they're not being kind of structurally sound and playing the right way. I know that typically does happen, and you definitely can't be doing that when you lose Sean Couturier, who is your best defensive center. So it's not an excuse, but I mean, that could be kind of part of what their thinking is. And I don't think AV is going to stand for that very long. I think in terms of the Gustafson-Haig pair, that was, I mean, if you asked us, like, that's doomed from the start, right? That's just like, it reminds me of saying, oh yeah, like, we just hope that they don't get burnt, right? Like, that's kind of the approach you take. Obviously Gustafson has been able to add a great dynamic to that second power play and some of that lost firepower from Ghost's down years in terms of offense from the back end. But yeah, I mean, the coaching staff knows Haig's probably their worst defenseman. I would like to see Friedman, considering he's a right-hand defenseman, get some time over Haig and go like a Gustafson-Friedman pair, because it fits the handedness of what we've seen. But like you said, I mean, if they're giving up that many odd-man rushes, that, especially with Coots out at least 2 weeks, that's just going to have to be more of a commitment to a structured game and kind of the game that AV like wants them to play. That's not going to cut it too much longer, especially against Buffalo. Even though they're not a great team, they have some firepower. And if you have Olofsson, Taylor Hall, Jack Eichel getting a 2-on-1, 3-on-2, like, and Brian Elliott's in net, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll say the second period, besides the fact that they gave up so many odd man rushes, they were very weak on the boards. They were getting pushed around every 50-50 battle to me. They lacked all kind of power in the second. They looked flat. The third period was a different story. And maybe it takes a period to adjust. Okay, that's fine. They got out with the win, which is the most important thing. But you can't, I don't know. I was not impressed with the game.
I mean, I agree. It was a bad game. Case in point, it was just a bad game. But I mean, I think it's important to remember there was no real preseason, no real camp in the way that you would normally have a camp. everything was kind of fixed from the start. And then you lose Coots in the beginning of the game, and the team still manages to manufacture three goals immediately and then five total and holds the Pens to two. I know a big part of that is Carter Hart. He had a phenomenal game. But I don't know. I have a hard time, like, looking at this game and being like, burn the tape. Like, it, you know, they're going to get torched if they keep doing this. I just don't think they'll keep playing like this. I think that game one, they didn't really play like this. They were sloppy at times for sure, but it was just a weird game. And these games are going to happen. If you look across the league, these games are happening. You had the Blues having a good game against the Avs on night one, and then they get shelled 8-0 on night two. The Oilers have traded, I think they've played three games. They like had they got shelled their first game, then McDavid went off in the game two, and then they got shelled again the other night. Like, it's going to be a weird start to the season for a lot of these teams. And again, like, this isn't like the middle of the season and they're playing like this. This is, you know, two games in, they had a rough game, but they still pulled out a 5-2 win. They would have never done this in the Dave Haxtell years. They probably wouldn't have done this with Craig Berube. Like, you know, a couple seasons ago, we're looking at a different story here. So it's good to know that even when the team is down their best player and not playing a good game by any stretch of the term, like, they're still able to pull out a win like this. I mean, that's ultimately the most important thing. So
I think the only reason they won was Carter Hart.
The fact that they put up five goals, like, it's not like they pulled out a 3-2 win here where they scored three in the beginning and they barely held on. They scored three in the beginning. The Pens got two back, and then the Flyers held them to not scoring them for the rest of the game and then scored two in the third. So
I think
if Carter's a net, four goals, I mean, every night should do it. I mean, there's obviously going to be
a lot of goals. Four goals.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, we've scored five and six goals. Like, if you're going to be scoring that many goals with Carter Hart and net, like, that's almost, like Mike said, I mean, I think the theme of this year, hopefully for us, is going to be, if we are going to be the best team in this division, the Mass Mutual division, is going to be, even on nights where we don't necessarily play well, it's kind of like the games in years past we've watched where we lose, where we were outplaying teams, getting like some decent chances, and then they just capitalize on every opportunity they're given. And that's kind of, at least from the highlights I watched from the second game and then watching the first game, that's kind of the general theme, is we used to suck in odd man rushes. And then the TK hat trick goal, I mean, that was a beautiful play. He drives the net, pass over to Hayes right across. He didn't get a stick on it per se, but it doesn't really matter if your body's there. That you made that play happen by driving the middle, pushing the D back, opening up that passing lane for Drew to get to Hayes, and then Hayes backdoor. Like, those are things in years past, like, I'm sure you guys remember, every odd man rush was just, it was hard to watch. And now it's the complete opposite. So like Mike said, you have to be careful of small sample sizes. No off season. It's better to be 2-0 and being like, okay, we can still get better, than being 0-2 and then kind of saying the same thing. So
we'll see. The sky is definitely not falling, but
it was just an ugly game. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth, for even though they won, you're expecting the team that's a contender to have their best game every night, and they just didn't. So
yeah,
it sucks, but 2-0, and they've scored 11 goals in two games. I mean,
yeah, we gotta ask those Pens boys what they think of Jari, because it was chase from the net.
I was gonna say
8 minutes in, he got
still got to be careful of the small sample size. But I think if nothing so far, this just really solidifies our stance on Carter Hart.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
100%.
He's just continuation of what we saw in the playoffs, and head to head. I mean, he not even close between him and Jari. So,
I mean, this is the last thing I'll say on this. We can literally just go back to the playoffs last year against the Islanders, like. This would have been game seven. Like, this was literally, you know, would have been the way game seven played out had the Flyers not, but that's not the case though, because the Flyers have the depth this year and they're not trotting out Derek Grant and Nate Thompson, and they're able to manufacture goals from every line. So I mean that could be the difference on your worst nights. If the Flyers had any of this offense or depth in that game seven, maybe we're looking at the Flyers in the Eastern Conference Finals that year. So this could be the difference this year. I don't know.
It could be. I think, I hope so. I certainly hope so. I don't see why it can't be. especially when you have Carter Hart, who can bail you out in games when you don't bring it. And he did on Friday night, man. He was spectacular. So we'll see what happens. Moving on, anything before we move on to the Coots injury?
No, I think that's a good segue.
Okay. So Coots is going to be out for a minimum of 2 weeks with anyone who would take a guess how to say
I was
going
to say, I would love for you to
costochondral separation. No
that's
idea.
That's probably
very nice.
That's got to
be nice.
You know, I speak several languages. I'm a metropolitan
not a big
man.
Deal.
What can I do?
According to Sam Carcitti, it's a separated shoulder, but except it's not a separated shoulder at all. So
yeah,
Sam's got
to
hit the textbooks
with the
again.
Ribs.
I was just about to say, I trust our boy Sammy Bull. So, all right.
The separation of like the cartilage from the ribs and your shoulder or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Alrighty. Well, he's going to be out a minimum 2 weeks, and the team definitely visibly looked lost without them for most of that game before they recovered. On the bright side, though, this gives guys like Nolan Patrick and Morgan Frost the chance to expand their roles, you know, especially in Frost's case, kind of prove why he may deserve a spot up here with the big club. What are you looking for moving forward with Coots? I think I'd be shocked if it's 2 weeks. I think it's going to probably be longer. I guess it really depends on how they look without him. And if they look great without him, maybe sit him a little bit longer, kind of like a Drew Brees situation last year with Teddy Bridgewater, where they went 5-0. They're like, all right, just fucking sit Drew for a little bit. So we'll see. But what are you guys thought?
Go ahead, Mike.
No, me. All right. Huge, huge opportunity here. Like you said, Joe, for Nolan Patrick.
He looked really good Friday. He was a standout for me. He looked great.
He's been talk about someone who's you said the Flyers were a little weak on the wall and kind of getting pushed around. He is imposing himself so far this year. He has looked very strong. I mean that one where he kind of crashed the crease that led to the second TK goal, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that was a big man's play. So that's a huge goal. So big chance for him. I think they should probably run him second line, or I think as AV said, 1A, 1B, and 1C.
Love that.
That's pretty true, to be honest, considering the talent they're running on those lines. So.
Such coach talk, but it's also it's true. It's true, though. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, with this lineup,
it's a cliche, but it's true.
Yeah, and then obviously tremendous opportunity to Frost, who didn't look lost last year with the Flyers. It was kind of like he was almost like a victim of circumstance, where like the Flyers didn't want him in the lineup full time last year. They clearly had their eyes on bringing in like depth players to the deadline, and they just didn't think he was a bottom six guy. So here's his chance to make a difference. He's going to be playing with Konechny and Lindblom, who are two great line mates to have. I mean, Lindblom is incredibly responsible player, and TK has actually shown signs of some hustle and some back check and everything like that this short season so far. So
yeah,
big chance
out there
for them
at the end of the game last game now.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
To seal it. So, I mean, I think shows.
Lindblom had the empty net goal, so.
Yeah, and TK's got the trust of AV for sure. No more TK on the bench for the final 15 minutes of a game.
Or in the box watching.
He has to learn.
Yeah, he has to learn from up there. He can't see from the bench.
And then huge opportunity. Like, this is just a big opportunity for every center. Like, Kevin Hayes is going to be top line now. He's looked really good to start the year with G and Farabee. And then Scotty Laughton. I feel like he plays his biggest hockey or his best hockey when there is like some injury shenanigans in the lineup. Like when all of a sudden he gets a slightly bigger role, he just comes out of nowhere and is able to pull out some two goal games, some one assist, one goal games. So just big opportunity. It sucks that they're missing Coots though. That's like the last between him, Hart, and Provorov. Those are like the last three guys you ever want to see.
Get injured.
Out, missing any time. So, yeah. Flyers responded well when Hart was out of the lineup last year. So,
yeah, I think exactly what you said. I mean, the good thing now, and this is again a depth comment, is Morgan Frost starting at 13 forward. I mean, in years past, that means, which is not a bad thing because Lawton's a very good, in my opinion, good 3C, but then you're kind of filling in a not so great 4C. Maybe you put Raffle there and Turensky or who knows, on the wing on the fourth line. Now we can still feel confident we can run three very highly skilled offensive centers through lines 1A, B, and C. And if anything else, I think this is going to be Morgan Frost's opportunity to show Chuck Fletcher, kind of make a decision for him when it comes to the expansion draft, right? I mean, that's a big decision. It depends on how Ghost plays this season, but I could easily see if he takes it and if he takes this opportunity and runs with it, it could mean, in my opinion, the end of JVR's time here in Philadelphia, right? I think just for cap reasons alone in the flap cap world, you have some deals coming up with Sanheim. If we have to go ahead and guarantee ourselves that Seattle takes JVR, who's still a very productive player, as you've seen, I think he has, what, 2 or 3 points so far to start the season, already on the board. I can't see why they wouldn't take him. And I wouldn't mind a Frost, Patrick, and insert whoever on that third line, Jake, third line going into next season. I won't get too ahead of myself, but I honestly do believe that, like we said, without any injuries this year, there really wouldn't have been an opportunity for him to play, unfortunately.
No, I agree. I'm excited to see kind of what 7 points looks like.
In 20 games. It's not a joke.
No.
Small sample size, but I mean.
And like Mike said, I don't think he ever really got lost last year. Frost, I thought he looked good at times, and other times he didn't look like he was ready 100%. And that's fine. I mean, it's to be expected. This year, though, I think I'm sure they sent him home last year with you know an edict of, hey, you know, someone's going to get hurt. You're going to have to play this year. So when your number gets called, make sure you're going to be ready. And hopefully he got that message and he took it to heart. I don't know. Like, I know, like, everybody was like, oh, Farabee gained 10 pounds of muscle. I don't know what Frost did or if he did anything to change his game or get bigger.
Matt, the year prior, he was 190. I remember that. And that's why it didn't make sense to me when we went to the playoffs, like Mike alluded to. And you're talking about Derek Grant having to play in front of him or Nate Thompson. And in my opinion, I think, I mean, the break maybe, but everyone had a break. So I didn't really understand the idea that he wasn't physically ready yet Joel Farabee's playing or Joel.
I think it just falls back to the coaching, I don't want to say favorites, but kind of they fall into that blind spot where they go to the veteran.
The hockey style goals, I'll never forget that.
The playoff.
The Dave Haxtell special. Yeah,
we're going to put Michael Roffel at the top.
Even though the line's been great, he scores playoff style goals.
Oh, my God.
What a world.
Yeah, what a mess. What a mess this team was for like a stretch of like 6 years or so, 7 years. Brutal.
A little bit.
I think I'm excited to see how the Frost experiment goes. I don't think he was never, like we've been saying, he was never out of place last year when he came up. His hockey IQ is so good that he was always in the right spot. It just came down to he might not have been strong enough. He might not have been mature enough to be there. So now that from all reports, he had a good camp. Again, he's a similar IQ player to Coots and to G, so there's no reason he shouldn't be able to do well on the line with Lindblom and TK. And maybe halfway into the game against Buffalo, they decide they want to put him with, you know, a little more size, and then they throw him with JVR and Jake, and you give Nolan the look with Lindblom and TK, you know, to try to insulate Frost a little bit. I could see them doing that, but I think it's a smart move. It's a savvy move to not change up the lines. Let the rest of the team stay the same because they're still finding their rhythm and they've looked good. And then, because this is going to be – Coots is missing at least 8 games.
It's an extended look. This is a nice long look for Frost to show something.
Someone had it like mapped out. If he misses 2 weeks, that's 8 games, which is like 15% of the season.
Mm.
So, and that's at least – like
that's a lot.
I think we might wind up seeing him out as many as 4 weeks.
I would guess some struggling.
Yeah. And then struggling to
reacclimate,
play with that injury for another month or so, a couple months, because it's not, I mean, it's just going to keep hurting him. He's just going to be in pain for the whole year whenever he comes back. So this is a chance, and this is a huge, we talked about before, the only thing that would really hold this Flyers team back is injury. Well, here's the biggest injury you could get outside of Carter Hart on this team, and we're going to see how this team responds to it. Big test. They've still got plenty of talent. There's no excuses. Obviously, you're going to miss Coots for his shutdown play on other top lines and stuff like that. But you have good defensive players on this team. You have plenty of talent to make up for it. You're not going to replace him completely. But it's not like that year that the Flyers faced the Capitals in the playoffs where Coots got hurt 2 minutes into game one, oh, and then the Flyers just had
knew it
nothing.
Was over. Yeah. You knew it was over there. Oh,
because Belmar and Vandevelde matching up against other, you know, lines is just not going to cut it. So
Michael Neuvirth did channel his inner, I don't know, God, Jesus, Buddhist, whatever you want to call it. And how many saves did he make in that one game? It was an unbelievable.
It was like the Flyers got outshot like 44-11 in that game or something.
Ryan Wayne had exaggerating. A pinball goal that hit off like six players in the game. Yeah. He was on the power play. Oh my God. God bless him. No excuses. Like you said, Mike, we talked so much on the offseason about how deep this team is, and especially at center. So, hey, it's time to put up now. You obviously, your best player is down, and it's going to be harder, but I think this team has the depth at center to overcome it. We'll see. We'll see how it looks. Looking ahead, we do have Buffalo coming to the town on Monday night. Finally get to see the highly touted combo of Jack Eichel and Taylor Hall. I know I'm excited. We'll see how the Flyers, you know, they're going to have some time now to prepare with life without Coots and how they're going to kind of attack the situation. What are your boys' thoughts on this quick back-to-back series? Because it is back-to-back. They're playing Tuesday night right after, so.
I think it's going to be important to see how we play to a team who you might want to consider being a little lesser than your own, right? So, I mean, obviously the Penguins are a huge rival for us, so I believe they knew they wanted to get off to a strong start. It's a good test to see against a lower team if we bring that same kind of energy and the same effort across the board. It's also going to be our first look at Brian Elliott, right? I mean, back-to-back game, you know you're not going to start the same goalie back-to-back night. So here's the first game for him to really start that bounce-back tour and hopefully provide us a good game when Carter Hart's not in that and still give us a chance to win.
Yeah, this is a theme that we're going to be talking about all year, but the Sabres are no joke in their top six. You have Taylor Hall, Jack Eichel, Tage Thompson, Victor Olofsson, Eric Staal, and Sam Reinhart. So those are six pretty good players. I mean, Hall and Eichel, I would say, are pretty elite. Victor Olofsson is going to be a monster. And then Eric Staal and Sam Reinhart are no jokes either. So those are good players. So the Flyers, you know, are going to have their hands full with them. But then you look down the rest of their lineup, I mean, they have like replacement players in the bottom six. Jeff Skinner is playing fourth line, so I mean, he's a good player. He had a really nice play the other night against the Capitals. But I mean, Tobias Reeder, Cody Eakin, Dylan Cousins, Curtis Lazar, and Riley Sheehan, those are all replacement level players. So there's no excuse. Like, this is where the depth of the team is going to have to shine. This is where Lotz is going to have a big game and all his guys. This is where Frost, if he wants to make a good impression, this would be the game to do it. I mean, he's going to get some favorable matchups probably, because they're not going to run him against Eric Staal. They're not going to run him against Jack Eichel. So if he's playing with Lindblom and TK against like Cody Eakin and or Curtis Lazar, like this is the time to do it. And this is where the Flyers' depth, this is where it should benefit them. Like this is not a very deep Buffalo team. Their defense, they have a couple good names, but Jake McCabe and Rasmus Ristolainen on the top defensive pairing, they're not replacement level players, but they are third line defensemen. We're going to be talking about this all year. Depth is going to be the keyword. We're going to have to put in all the metadata of every single episode we do, every focus keyword.
Can we do one of those word clouds at the end? I want to see how big depth is. It's going to be enormous.
We absolutely should. That and Dave Haxtall are going to be the two biggest in the word cloud.
No, I agree with both of you guys. Depth, and we're going to say it 1,000 times, but another thing the Flyers should be taking advantage of is the goalies. I mean, not super strong in Linus Ullmark, and who is the other guy?
Carter Hutton.
I mean, goalies are such weird animals. You know, we just joked about Michael Neuvirth in that game a couple of years ago, but that can happen on any night with any goalie, so we'll see what happens. But
it looks
definitely
like
some...
Eric Staal, too, might be day-to-day.
Ooh.
I'm all seeing right, so... as well. Was he the one who took the high hit? Do you guys happen to remember? I did see a video of one of the players on Buffalo taking a high hit. So it looks like Kyle Poso. I know Gergensen's is out long-term. And it looks like Eric Staal might be day-to-day. So he might be a game-time decision. If he doesn't go, I mean, Jesus. That's their tough. Only center at that point is Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
So, again, it's an opportunity for Frost and everyone to really get settled in and get used to life without Coots. And it's an opportunity for Brian Elt to reestablish himself and show that he can give us a chance to win on any given night. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited to watch Jack Eichel and Taylor Hall. Hopefully they play well, but they don't score. We can watch some fun plays. We definitely don't want to be taking too many penalties. I can tell you that first unit of Reinhardt, Eichel, Taylor Hall.
Ristolainen's got a big shot from the point.
Or he's on the second unit though. It's Dahlin on the first unit with Victor Olofsson. But the issue really comes is you have on each half wall Eichel and Olofsson, and then you have Taylor Hall in the trigger spot, and they've been deadly so far. So I think discipline is going to be the name of the game. Just having everyone settle in, and then Brian Elliott just playing well enough to give us a chance.
No, I agree. I think the Flyers, they've done an okay job so far with when it comes to staying out of the box. They've been okay. It's the Penguins, so it's always kind of tough because it's a rivalry game and it can get a little chippy. We should mention, by the way, that elbow that Sanheim took from Jake McCabe. God. He's escaping.
$10,000
fine. Yeah, $10,000 fine. To me, that's probably – it's probably worthy of a game, but whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, Brian. I mean, it's a Bush League play. Like,
100%.
Jared McCann, he went out of his way to throw McCabe. The elbow. Yeah, yeah. He watched him throw one in the next game too. He watched his follow through the whole time. So like, just a Bush League play. The Pens were doing that type of stuff. I mean, I think we're gonna have to expect that from them every game, that they're gonna be doing stuff like that. There was another play, I think in game one, that I actually tweeted about or something, that it was like, I saw it enough to be like, that's a Bush League play, like case in point. So, yeah.
I wasn't just shocked. It's the Pens. The fact that the Penguins, Malkin, he could literally two hand someone across the face and they would say like he lost his balance or something ridiculous of that nature. I mean, that
he was actually swatting for a fly, Matt. It was a fly.
Yeah. If you've ever played the sport, I mean, there's nothing that would happen that would cause you to extend your elbow back and behind you. Like, no part of his body made contact with Sanheim except for his elbow, which was moving in the opposite direction of his body. That was the only reason it's not a suspension is really because of the injury. There was no injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're trying to get those out of the game, it shouldn't be, oh, well, it caused an injury. It didn't cause an injury. It very well could have if it hit him in the wrong place. So I'm not shocked. The front office of the NHL and that whole player safety department it's a joke.
No, it is. But the Flyers, like you said, got to stay out of the box against this Buffalo team. They are no joke. Let's hopefully they do that. And then obviously, I was running the Twitter on Friday night for the most part, and then I hopped off towards the end of the night, and I didn't realize till Mike let us know that Jake was saying some stuff after the post game. For those of you who don't know, just a little bit of context and backstory. Mike Sielski is a beat writer here in Philadelphia. Wrote a piece, I guess it was last year, about how the veterans were not really taking AV seriously. He said that they were kind of laughing when AV was speaking about accountability, and then a whole kind of thing ensued. Mike, because you're more the writer here, take us through a little bit and kind of give them some more context, because I was just laughing when I saw it.
Oh yeah, I mean it was hilarious. It was like, I mean, we've seen Jake sound off in post game interviews, and we've seen him sound off on Twitter at fans.
We're not blocked yet, by the way. I checked.
We're not blocked yet. I don't want to get blocked.
No,
I do not either.
No,
we're pro anyway, Jake on this pod. Pro pod.
Yeah, absolutely. Big pro Jake. Yeah, this was strange because I don't think we've ever seen him really sound off at a reporter like before. So he, you know, he's given snippy answers and stuff, but he straight up called Sielski out. So he
called him a weasel.
Yeah, called him a weasel. Yeah. So it all stems from that incident where Sielski wrote an article basically saying that Giroux and Voracek weren't leaders and they don't care. And he prefaced it by being like, he tweeted out this weird tweet where it was like, I don't know why Jake Voracek was laughing while Elaine Vigneault was talking in the locker room. All I know is that he was. And then the whole article went on to insinuate, I would say it was more than insinuate, he basically just straight up said he was laughing at AV giving a speech, when in reality AV was also talking to media members, and Jake was like sitting with JVR and joking around with him. So the facts of the case were like immediately disputed by every player and by like pretty much every other beat in the city, maybe save Broad Street Bowl or something like that, I don't know, but it seems to have all stemmed from that. And then if you go back, Sielski has been like riding the anti-Voracek train for years now.
He's a troll.
I mean, I know
he's a troll writer. Yeah, and even his, like, and I get it. Listen, not every media member has to be buddy buddy with like with the team. You want people who point out flaws and write objectively. You need that.
Yeah, they shouldn't be, to an extent. I mean, it's their job to hold them
right
accountable and everything.
But like it gets to the point where it's kind of like a boy who cried wolf, but like in reverse, mm-hmm. because like he's been coming after Jake for so long, and like, and those tweets he does where he's like, he takes subtle shots and he's like, you know, Voracek should be traded, my column. Like, he does that stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, eventually people would just start to think you have it out for a player when you constantly badger them. And, you know, it's just very strange. And Jake clearly didn't forget. That was a year ago, and he did not forget.
And that's the thing, that's, you see a lot of people, I've seen a lot of fans, obviously on board with Jake, but then I've seen a lot of people being like, why, you know, he should have manned up, he should have done this before, like, Why is the emphasis on Jake, a professional athlete, to go out of his way last year during the season when he's got to focus on playing the game, and then during the pandemic, like coming back playing in a pandemic, why is the emphasis on him to go up to Mike Sielski? Because I saw Sam Carcitti tweeted that today. He was like, one time I wrote a bad
Pronger
article about about Pronger, and he's like, Pronger and I had, he took me in a room, we had a conversation and handled it there. Like, bro, this is not one bad article. This is, Mike Sielski has been like, it was that article, he was basically trying to like defame Jake's character as a leader on this team. But then he's also like led a campaign in his like column for the last 7 years, basically saying that Jake doesn't care. And like that type of stuff, like if you were at work every day and you just had someone from a different like company coming into your office every day and like spreading rumors about you, like I feel like that would be, I would be pissed. I'd be like, all right, I don't want to deal with you. Like, what?
Not only that, but like, so riddle me this: Mike Sielski is allowed to go in public and try and assassinate Jake Voracek's character, but Voracek isn't supposed to publicly defend himself. He's supposed to do it in behind closed doors when mm-hmm. Sielski can. He literally will control the narrative because he's going to write whatever he wants. Like Jake said. Why not?
Yeah, imagine a scenario where Jake Voracek pulls Mike Sielski into a room and yells at him for this article, and then the column that Sielski writes the next day would be like weak-minded Flyers star. Like, come on!
Yeah, if you're gonna openly call me out to the public in front of everyone, which is, you know, you're a reporter, it's your job to do that, but don't expect for me to just be buddy buddy with you and take you like, hey, I understand. No, I'm going to publicly defend myself if you're going to like try and publicly shame me.
As a writer and a journalist, like, I'm pretty pro media for the most part. But sports media is like a weird field where it's like, we like,
it's clickbaity now.
Yeah.
And, like, and that's the problem, I think, is the fact go ahead, finish.
Go ahead, Matt. No, I was just going to say, like, they treat these, like, journalists are, you know, the outside world are supposed to like hold companies and corporations accountable and stuff like that, and politicians. In sports, they like bring that same heat to athletes, and they treat them like they're these like monster corporations who are like poisoning people's well water and stuff. Like, dude, all Jake did was laugh at a dude's joke in the locker room. Like, why are you trying to ruin his career?
Who knows? You have no idea what he and JVR were talking about.
And he didn't even try to find out. And that's the biggest issue. And I think a lot of times, especially now when, like I mentioned, that it's very clickbaity and you try to make these jokes on social media to gain a following, is that just the same way that an athlete's held accountable, like, they're going to read this. I mean, some players more than others. And we talk about it all the time, like NHL players having a personality. Like other sports, they're definitely more outspoken. And I have no problem with Jake calling someone out who he thinks his way to the top is to try to be like the Stephen A. Smith of the NHL. Like if you want to play that game and you don't have an actual relationship with these players that you know behind the scenes, they're not going to be mad at you, or they kind of know it's all for show, then yeah, don't sit there and pretend like, oh, like why are they coming after me now? Like it's just,
and it's embarrassing. I don't know why people are shocked either by Jake, because he's been the same person since he got here. Mm-hmm. He's never
been calling out fans on social media for the past 2 years.
He'll block people. He blocks people on Twitter, which is, hey, whatever, fine. Don't block us, Jake, please. But he's unapologetically him. And to tie it into your point, Matt, I mean, the NHL desperately needs people who are the kind of have their own brand and are kind of doing stuff other than the normal hockey man answers. Jake's that guy. I remember a couple of years ago, I think the Flyers were coming off like a bad streak of games, and then they kind of flipped the switch, and I think they won. I don't know if it was right after maybe it was around the 10-game winning streak or something, but they're like, I think it was Sam Carcitti asked Jake, they're like, what did you do different? He's like, we went out and we got hammered. Like, that was their answer. Like, yeah, we all went out and we drank a bunch of beers, and we were like, hey, we all have to be better, and they talked about accountability, and that was it. And like, that's the kind of guy Jake is. And I hope he stays that way. I don't ever see him changing, honestly. He's not gonna be, you know, a goody two shoes guy. He's gonna tell you what's on his mind. And if for a journalist, I can't think of anything better than someone who's, you know, he's a quote machine. So go after him. Just don't be surprised when you constantly poke a snake and eventually it snaps back at you every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna build a personality, like Matt, like you said, as like a troll or like a. You can't be the one getting trolled in response. Like you can't get upset when someone else brings heat back at you. I mean, we've seen that develop in other areas too this season so far.
If your brand is getting people mad online, you then can't in turn be mad online. You just can't do it. So
I hope we don't have to talk about this at any other point in the season. But I have a feeling that this is not over. The Sealski Voracek. Saga.
I hope it pops up again. I hope like 5-6 weeks from now the Flyers are doing really great and Mike, you know, Sealski's like, hey Jake, like talk about your chemistry with JVR and how he's like, Mike, you rat. No, I'm not gonna answer. It's funny. It is what it is. Any last thoughts on that before we wrap up, boys?
No, I mean, A+ reaction from TK. Yeah, to hold it together,
drinking the water, kind of looking over.
I saw someone mention too, it would have been better if he was like middle of drinking the water when that went down.
Oh, 100%.
And like, he spits out half of it because of the comment. But I mean, yeah, I mean, this year is just, there's so many different things to talk about. It's the first year where you look at Jake and G, and you have the opportunity to ask them, like, hey, how's it feel to actually have the talent around you to feel like you can compete for a cup? I mean, every year that's the go-to answer. It's, oh, we're here to win a cup. Mm. Yet 90% of teams in the NHL know in the back of their mind, like, this team is not deep enough to win the cup. Yeah. This is the first time in a long time. And there's really just no need for, at least in this season, to have those types of just bogus questions when in turn you can kind of write about the change that we've seen in this team over the past year or so and kind of the excitement surrounding what kind of potential they have. So.
And this team has had a battle with reporters. You can go back to Richards and Carter, Dry Island. You can go back as far as you want. They've always had issues with local media, so I don't think it'll ever change. But, anything from you, Mikey?
No, I think I've said all I can about this. I just, it's just annoying. It's just annoying to me. I was annoyed way back when by the article itself because there was no integrity behind it.
No, it's bad journalism.
And then now, yeah, and then now the fact that it's boiled over into this where Jake is somehow also the bad guy again, it's like, you know, give me a break. Yeah.
No, I agree. But the Flyers are going to be down their number one center. All offseason, though, we talked about how deep this team is. We talked about it in this episode, especially at center. They've got the chance to prove us right now or prove us wrong, I guess. All starts Monday night with Buffalo coming into town. Check us out Thursday for a recap of the quick Buffalo series and anything else that happens in the meantime. Have a great week, Philadelphia.